Hello, Beaver Nation, and welcome to Beaver Banter, an Oregonian sports podcast. I'm Joe Freeman, senior writer at The Oregonian. He's Nick Daschle, Beaver's beat writer at The Oregonian, and we're here to talk all things Oregon State. Daschle, what's up, man?
Well, I spent all day driving back and forth to Seattle yesterday, so today's kind of kicking back and just taking care of loose ends.
So R&R.
Yeah. The highlight of the trip was making sure to stop at A&A on the way back and getting a slice of 23-layer cake from Michael Jordan's to take home to my wife. So,
was it any good?
Oh, it's not like I haven't done this before, but yeah,
I've awesome. Never heard of it.
You never heard of their 23-layer chocolate cake? God, it's awesome. It's 23 layers.
How's that possible? How do you get it in a car?
It's just little thin slices of cake with their special whatever frosting they've got in, but it lasts you for a week. A slice will last you a week because it's
how much does a slice cost?
It's up to $18 now. Mm-hmm. But talking Michael Jordan's, where steaks, I'm sure, you know, $100. So,
well, the highlight of the Freeman household this weekend was the eight-year-olds basketball game when they got their first win. The Alameda Dribbling Dragons, 17-14, barn burner.
Well, that's a pretty high scoring for a third grade game. Is that third grade or eight? Do they call it 8-year-old or third grade?
It's third grade. I don't know. It's all third graders. Yeah.
Boy, the difference in levels of teams you play in that are just so wide. I remember when I coached my daughter's third grade team, you know, we'd have games that were pretty close. Then we'd have games where we'd spend the whole second half running a play to a player that had never scored in a game ever. Mm. But the entire second half, just running one play over and over and over till she scored because the game was so out of hand and that's all you would do.
Yeah, so these girls are, this was their, I don't know, fifth games ever. So it's a very beginner level here. I think it's like Portland Parks and Rec or whatever, but
yeah.
They're having fun though. They're enjoying it. So it's fun to watch.
That's good.
All right. Well, we're going to talk some hoops. We're going to talk some baseball. It is the season after all. But before we do, a couple quick notes, including a quick football note. The NFL Combine starts this week and the Beavers will have four participants, their most since 2009. Receiver Anthony Gould will be there. Right tackle Talisi Fuaga, of course. He's almost a lock as a first-round pick, it seems like. Cornerback Ryan Cooper Jr. and safety Ketan Oladapo. Again, the most for the Beavers since 2009. I think you can check out most of the Combine stuff on the NFL Network and probably some kind of online something or other. So use the Google machine and see how you can access that if you want to watch some of your Beavers. And, of course, we will have you locked in with a bunch of coverage here at OregonLive.com/Beavers. And because we're here for you, Beavers fans, I have a quick public service announcement for you. It's a big day in Corvallis on Thursday. The women's basketball team is hosting Stanford in a big game at 7 p.m. at Gill. And on the same day, the baseball team will play its home opener at 5:35. So don't dilly-dally on Thursday. Get there early. Get your parking spot early so you're not scrambling to get into one of the venues there. And this includes you, Daschle, and it includes me. I'm gonna get there earlier than normal. Make sure I have a good parking spot in the garage there so I'm not messing around. Same goes to you, buddy.
No, I'll be okay. The one that kills me a little bit though is there's a number of fans that are griping about Oregon State's re-enter policy. They changed their policy, I think, within the last year or so, where you can't leave during a game and then re-enter. That was a big thing in football because people would leave at halftime, go out their car, get liquored up or whatever, and come back, and they don't allow that anymore. So some fans are a little upset because they want to go to the baseball game. They want to go to the basketball game, but then what if they want to go back to the baseball game? And I'm thinking, how long would you think that baseball game is going to go? I mean, if you go to the basketball game and stay till, say, the fourth quarter, 8:39, close to 9 o'clock. I mean, do you want to go back? I guess the game would last 3.5. I guess a baseball game will last 3.5 hours, but
hey, let's not get carried away here. We don't need any 3.5 hour, 4 hour baseball game. I will say this: Oregon State might score 35 runs against North Dakota State. So,
I'm just,
it's going to be a lot of fireworks.
I'm just saying. Don't know why you would want to go to one, go to the other, then go back to the baseball game. I don't know. Anyway,
I find
some things that fans get upset about seem to be kind of crazy.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never known any sports fan to get upset about anything.
Yeah, except you.
Repeatedly on a daily basis.
Yeah.
All right. Public service announcements over. News and notes over. Let's get on to women's basketball. The basketball gods giveth and they taketh away, all in a span of 3 days for your Oregon State women's basketball team. On a season-defining Friday, the Beavers ended a 5-game losing streak against Washington State with a mammoth victory in Pullman. And in a stunner, Arizona beat Stanford, the Pac-12 leader, seemingly in control of another Pac-12 championship. The double dose of good Beaver news created a jewel-worthy scenario on Sunday. A Beavers win at Washington would set up an incredible matchup versus Stanford at Gill Coliseum with first place in the Pac-12 on the line. But cue your sad trombone here. The Beavers flopped 2 days later on Sunday, falling to Washington. The loss all but ended Oregon State's chances of winning the Pac-12. And even worse, it set up a dogfight for a first-round bye at the Pac-12 tournament. With 2 games left, Stanford has a 2-game lead over the Beavers and USC and either UCLA or Colorado. They play tonight, right? We're recording on Monday, February 26th, and they play tonight. Is that right?
You play tonight. That's correct.
Okay. So the winner of that will jump into the fray there in that 3-way tie for second place.
UCLA can jump in it. Colorado wouldn't. Colorado's a game back, but UCLA would be tied for second, right?
Yeah. So big game tonight, big games this weekend, and a big loss it turns out for Oregon State. The tough loss did not go unnoticed in this week's AP poll. Oregon State fell from 9th to 11th. Stanford's up there at 4th, and then just a smattering of Pac-12 teams littering the poll. USC 7th, UCLA's 8th, Colorado's 13th, and Utah is 18th. I don't even know where to begin here, Nick. I guess, you know, how do you explain the flop? What happened there in Seattle? And then, you know, where do the Beavers go from here, I guess?
Well, it doesn't really take a lot of explanation. It's Reagan Beers. Mm-hmm. You know, without Reagan Beers, Oregon State isn't the same team. They're just not. I mean, shouldn't be a big surprise. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's the leading scorer and rebounder on the team. She was I wouldn't say she was a candidate for player of the year because Juju Watkins locked that up a long time ago, but she's definitely a candidate for, you know, like maybe one of the top 3 or 4 players in the conference. And you lose a player like that, I mean, their offense just changes when she's not in there. She's you know, able to demand double teams down in the post. They're just a different team. But that can be said for any of the top 6 teams in the Pac-12. You take Juju Watkins off USC, they're not very good. Stanford lost Cameron Brink Friday. They lost to Arizona. UCLA without Lauren Betts, they're not nearly as good. You know, same thing with Peely at Utah. You lose your best player, you're going to change. Now, if
Washington had 4 wins going, 4 conference wins
Washington
going.
Washington is not as bad, and Washington is not as bad that's the thing with the Pac-12. They won their 5th Pac-12 game, but they've been in competition with everybody in the league. They've beaten USC. They took Stanford overtime. I mean, they can be good on a given base, and every team other than maybe Oregon and Arizona State. Arizona State even at times shows up, but Washington, they can give you problems just because they're pretty much a guard forward team. They don't have any centers, so if you're not really into that small ball thing, it can be difficult. The thing with Oregon State is this: with Reagan Beers, they got the potential to be a Final Four team. Without Reagan Beers, they got to play perfect to beat good teams. So that's the bottom line on this team, and that's why they lost at Washington, because, you know, they're just not as effective without her. That's, I mean, I can make those excuses for them. You know, maybe they don't want to do that, but I can. It's pretty obvious what the difference is. I mean, I think they beat USC last week if they had Reagan Beer. So the good news is, while they're not saying she's going to be back, I'd be surprised if they don't give it a try this week with her wearing a mask. They're not, again, it's not official. That's just me, you know, reading between lines and whatnot. I think there's a pretty good chance that they're going to at least try to see if they can get her back this week. But she'll have to wear a mask, and that's you just never know. You don't know how you're going to play with a mask on. She might love it. She might hate it. She might be somewhere in between. But just her presence on the floor should make a difference if she's able to play this weekend.
Well, like I said, you got to lean into that, man. You got to bring the. You got to become an intimidator when you put on that mask. You just got to put it on. You got to change your personality and just get mean. Got to get nasty.
You've seen. I mean, covering the NBA. I mean, you've seen a number of guys wear masks, and I mean, how does it impact them?
It depends, like you said. It's guy to guy, person to person. In this case, woman to woman. Some people really embrace it and love it and kind of take on that personality, and some people find it cumbersome and distracting. I found it's often the guards that have bigger troubles, though, you know, with the shooting and the court vision and that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you have a chance to practice, which presumably, you know, Beers will, at some level you've got to grow comfortable, as comfortable as you can be with it. So, you know, if she has the ability to practice and try it on and give it a go a few times, or at least a couple times, I just can't see it being a problem. And you know, like you kind of alluded to, in addition to her, you know, all around talent and skill, it's her presence that changes the game for them as much as anything, with the double teams and the low post threat she brings. So I don't know. A mask or no mask, you know, if you're going to put on a mask, get out there and play and make it happen, I guess.
I mean, the big goal, you know, as far as this week goes, the big goal for this week is to get a first round bye in the Pac-12 tournament. And the tiebreakers are endless right now, even with a week left. I'm going to kind of wait till UCLA and Colorado play tonight, and then I'll figure it out. But best I can figure out is, if Oregon State beats Cal on Saturday, they should finish in the top four. They could finish as high as second. Stanford's not going to lose at Oregon, so first place is out. So they could get as high as second. I think third place is real attainable, the three seed, which would allow them to avoid playing Stanford until the championship game. So,
really just such a buzzkill, though. That would have been, and it will be, a great environment, and it will be, you know, a big, you know,
It's also the last time. I mean, it's still going to be a big game, big time game. I mean, it's number four versus 11. Yeah. Last time that Tara is probably going to coach at Oregon State, I would think. You know, with Stanford going to the ACC, you know, they don't beat Stanford very often. So maybe this is the last time, you know, they go out with a win against them and have, you know, there's going to be a big crowd there regardless of what's on the line.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, it's like I said, it is a buzzkill. You would like to see that, the potential for a Pac-12 championship on the line.
Oh,
there.
Sure. Yeah. No, yeah, that part was. But I mean, they didn't play well enough yesterday, and it was obvious without, you know, there was no mystery as to why they lost yesterday. Those windows tighten up pretty quickly without Reagan Beers out there. It's easier to guard Oregon State without her being in the middle.
Yeah, and you know, their depth is solid, but I guess when you just can't make up for that loss. I guess I don't know. You would like to see some going small and changing styles and stuff like that, but I guess there's only so much you can do in such a short amount of time.
No, but I think she'll be back. So It's not going to hurt him too badly if she can get back, because the big things are getting that seeding in the NCAA tournament and getting the seeding in the Pac-12 tournament among the top four in both. If you can get those two, then you set yourself up for a pretty good postseason.
Yeah, and that really is what, more than anything, like you said, if they can just get that first round bye in the Pac-12 tournament, it sets them up for a really nice postseason run. Again, though, like we have outlined, the Pac-12 is as good as it always is with so many teams in the top 25. So there are going to be no givies in Las Vegas there. But, you know, if they can get that first round bye and get Stanford as late as possible, that sets them up for maybe a 2 seed in the NCAAs. What's the latest bracketology there? Is it still a 2 seed for them? Or?
Yeah, the NCAA in their last reveal had them as a 3 seed. And since then, they've beaten UCLA and Washington State and lost to USC and Washington. My guess is they're probably still around a 3 seed. We'll find out Thursday for sure, because that's when the NCAA does their last tournament bracket reveal for the top 4 seeds in each regional. I mean, I'd be surprised if Oregon State wasn't still in the top 4, and they probably will still be a 3 seed. The big thing is, does the NCAA keep them in Portland? Mm-hmm. And I just, again, I can't imagine that they won't have them in Portland. It just, the fact that you could pretty much guarantee sellouts with Oregon State would be a big deal. But who knows? Maybe they want to ship them to Albany. I don't know.
Well, there's, for a variety of reasons, it makes sense. Not only is it, you know, regionally it makes sense, from a sellout standpoint, I imagine that event will sell out anyway. It's drawn incredibly well, you know, over the last few years since it's the,
yeah,
Portland's worked into the mix. But even more, man, at a time when, you know, school, we're talking about conference realignment and everything and financial implications everywhere, why would you force a team to fly across the country when they can just drive, you know, an hour and a half north? So give me a break on all that too. It makes a lot of reasons, both logistically and financially, for both parties.
Sure. Yeah.
But never has the NCAA claim to, you know, necessarily make sense with their actions, with its actions. So I guess we shouldn't assume that the right thing is going to happen.
But the other thing is, does this week with Oregon State, with baseball returning, with you know, the basketball, is it bigger than what happened in Arlington this last weekend? I say no. That was an enormous tournament. And Oregon State, they're every bit as good as we thought they were.
Yeah, they really are. It was another solid week for the team. Just to kind of recap, they won 3 or 4 games at Globe Life Field in Arlington. They played a midweek game against Texas Tech, number 19 Texas Tech, beat them handily. Had a kind of an instant classic against Arkansas, number 2 Arkansas, lost to them 5-4. I tell you, that game was ridiculous. Arkansas's starting pitcher, Hagen Smith, he's kind of a projected first round pick in the Major League Baseball draft this year. He struck out 17, program record 17, faced 22 Oregon State hitters, and the Beavers only sent one ball out of the infield. Had a bunt single, an infield single, and Trent Carraway had a single up the middle that reached the outfield. Only one out wasn't via strikeout.
I mean, dude only had like 72 pitches, didn't he? Or 70? He did. I mean, to strike out 17 guys, you have to throw a minimum 51 pitches.
Yeah, his first inning was 10 of 11 pitches were strikes, and it really just kind of set the tone. You know, announcers and people have pontificated about the performance since, and kind of compared it to Strasburg and Paul Skeens from last year. It really reminded me of a Cooper Jerpy performance at Stanford 2 years ago, where he, I believe it was, struck out 16 batters in a very similar performance. I think he ended up going more like 8 innings, though. Similar thing, he ended up with a no decision. The Beavers lost that game, I want to say, in the 9th or 10th inning. But that's what it reminded me. It was another lefty just overpowering hitters. Yeah. And I would say the most impressive thing wasn't just his ridiculous performance, but that it came against just an insane offense that Oregon State has, you know, backed up the preseason hype with. So, you know, you add all that together, it was definitely as good of a performance as you'll ever see.
I mean, the only unfortunate part of that whole thing was the game was played in February instead of mid-April. Because if this is mid-April, they let him go 105, 110 pitches. And who knows? I mean, I don't know what the NCAA record for strikeouts is, but he probably sets it.
Yeah, that the way he was dialed in, and he was not slowing down. I mean, he was just getting stronger as things went on. So, you know, that's just one of those things you have to tip your cap to a dude who just brings it. The Oregon State ended up striking out a school record 23 times, even when he left the bullpen fan some more. I think it was 23. And but I will give them credit. They didn't roll over. They ended up evening the score at 4-4. And then kind of had a chance, you know, then Arkansas took a one-run lead with a two-out hit, took a 5-4 lead late in the game. And then the Beavers had the winning run and scoring position in the ninth and then just couldn't get the job done. Pinch hitter, I think Levi Jones struck out with a guy on, I think he was on third in the ninth, which kind of ended things. But
I mean, really, what a luxury to be a pitcher on Oregon State staff. I mean, what are the odds they're ever going to get into a 2-1 game this year?
Well, they just had a 5-4 game. So,
I mean, the fact is, I mean, as a pitcher, you don't have to worry about being, you know, so perfect that you know, one hit or one run is going to kill you. It's, I mean, even in that game, they score four and they've scored six in every other game and double digits in what, 4 or 5 game? I don't know how many, I don't remember the number, but. I mean, these guys just score a ton of runs. So
yeah. To that point, they outscored Texas Tech, Michigan, and Oklahoma State, which are two of those teams are very good, by a combined score of 29-6 in that tournament. The offense, you know, we talked about it in depth last week, and I'm sure we will as we continue throughout the spring. But the lineup's no joke, man. After 8 games, it's hitting .336, slugging .641, which ranks 11th in the country. Beavers have scored 75 runs and hit 19 home runs, which is tied for 4th in the country. That's part of 40 extra base hits. So it's just a ridiculous lineup. Like we talked about last week, no holes really. For example, Brady Casper, who opened the season with a 6-game hitting streak, and I'd have to look up what he's hitting, but he's hitting about 400 and he's got a home run and a couple doubles, had a real nice start to the season. He kind of, I assume, he didn't play the last 2 games is what I'm getting at. And he kind of had a little collision with Travis Bazana. They chased down a pop-up in shallow right, and they kind of collided awkwardly. Brady Casper limped to the dugout. I think this was against Michigan. And he finished the game. Or no, actually, it was against Arkansas. He finished the game but had not played in his next two games. Well, Dallas Macias comes off the bench, starts in his place. And, you know, he has an RBI single and a couple hits, you know, and next thing you know, he's in the cleanup hole. So that just shows you how deep the lineup is that a sophomore replacing, a senior stalwart can come in and jump into the cleanup hole because he's swinging like that. So, you know, I will say this, though. You brought up pitching and what it's like to pitch for them, and we've talked a lot about the offense. The Oregon State's pitching was exceptional throughout the series against a couple of really good offenses three of the 4 teams are talented, and we're talking regional-type teams. Jacob Kamatz and Eric Segura really impressed me. They earned their first wins of the season. Kamatz struck out a career-high 10 in a win over Michigan, and that was kind of notable because he had an arm injury at the end of last year. He missed the postseason last year. Didn't throw all off season while they allowed his arm to rest and recover. And he was a little amped up and erratic in his return in surprise last week. I think he only lasted 3 innings and really had command issues, a lot of walks and hit by pitches. And so to see him kind of lock back in and pitch what was one of the better games of his career was very encouraging. And, you know, on top of that, I have been very impressed with Eric Segura, a kid from California who has looked very strong in his first 2 starts. He gave up two runs in a no decision in surprise, and then earned a win over Oklahoma State. He struck out seven. I want to say he just allowed the one first inning run. And he had what impressed me is he had command problems the first three innings. I think he walked three and allowed a hit by pitch, four and his, you know, four free passes in his first 11 at bats, and then didn't allow one the rest of the game, kind of got stronger as he went on, and then just gave up the one run against a good Oklahoma State team. So, you know, you have to think that freshman's kind of locked down that Sunday starter role when you pair him with the two vets, the two best friends at the top of the rotation. That's a really nice threesome right there. So,
but speaking of that, do we know anything about Aiden May?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That is the one concern is Ace Aiden May. He really held his own, if not, I mean, he didn't battle Smith strikeout for strikeout, but he threw very well against Arkansas in his five innings, and then kind of looked like he tweaked his forearm or had some kind of arm injury, was pulled in the fifth after I can't remember how many pitches it was, but kind of had a little, you could see in the dugout, had a little talk with Mitch Canham, came over and basically said, you know, we're going to be cautious and pulled you, I think was his message. Kind of gave him a back slap. You know, we weren't there in Texas, but it sounds like it was mostly a precautionary kind of a deal. The Beavers are very conservative with their pitchers and their pitchers' pitch counts early in the season. You know, you brought up Smith only throwing 70 or 80 pitches. I don't know that an Oregon State pitcher has thrown more than 80 or 81 so far this season. They, you know, Segura could have pitched two or three more had it been, you know, maybe late May or June, but you know, they pulled him after five. And so we'll have an availability on Wednesday to talk to Canham and players. So we'll have to see where Aiden May is there. Assuming, you know, there's nothing wrong there, I wouldn't be stunned if they held him out one start while they're facing North Dakota State, unless it's just really was nothing and it was just kind of a sore forearm or something. We'll have to see. But that will definitely be worth monitoring because he's just been excellent in two starts. And, you know, he's immensely important to this season.
It's always funny to me that Oregon State fans, as much as they follow this baseball team, you know, they were reaching out to me, emails and Twitter messages and stuff. You know anything more about Aiden May? How long have you been around Oregon State baseball? They're not big on giving out information on injuries. They just never have been. I mean, until there's availability, and then it's, you know, you're not going to get the full picture, which you don't expect to, but they've never been big on, hey, yeah, he's got a whatever to his arm and we expect him to be out 4 weeks. You know, they're not really big on doing that stuff.
I've talked to Mitch about this several times in his philosophy. And, you know, as a guy who I'm sure most people know, I covered the NBA for 14 years. So it's a whole different deal there in the professional aspect, but Mitch's whole deal, and I appreciate and respect it, is he wants to almost allow the kid to make the decision. Even if a kid is faced with, you know, an arm injury that will sideline him for the season, if he's expected to undergo surgery, he clears it with the kid to make sure what he can and can't say. And then he would prefer the kid to kind of allow, you know, the details of what he wants to release. You know, and these guys are very sensitive to that in large part because of the draft and scouts and what information Major League Baseball teams get. And so I understand it. Hopefully we get to talk to Aiden on Wednesday. We certainly would get to talk to Mitch. And, you know, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it was something very minor that kind of flared up and he'll start as normal on Friday against the Bison. I think they're the Bison. And if not, well, hopefully we get some kind of information. But yeah, you're right, man. College sports in particular.
It's the same thing with Reagan Beers. I've been getting hit hard with, you know, when's she going to come back? And, you know, how bad is her nose broken? And blah, blah. I mean, they're not going to tell me how bad her nose is broken. And if she is coming back Thursday, I fully don't expect Scott to say anything other than, we hope she comes back, because competitively, why would he want to tell Tara Vonderveer if she's going to play or not?
Yeah.
I mean, I wish he would, but I don't expect he will, because it's just a competitive situation that they can get away with in college. So, yeah.
I've long found it peculiar, the minutia of detail that sports fans want regarding injuries to their athletes. It's sometimes it's not enough to say they have a broken nose or they have a sprained ankle or whatever. The details sometimes that fans want is, it's a very strange thing. And I know how it is. We're all passionate about the teams we love, so I get it. But college teams and coaches will often kind of, use HIPAA as a way to shield themselves from addressing a lot of that. I will say this on this note, professional teams have kind of a rules and regulations and a reporting kind of guidelines that they have to follow regarding injuries. And as gambling becomes more and more prevalent in college sports, I can see that trickling down to college, where there has to be some type of standard that teams follow, because, otherwise that competitive advantage you talk about, if you're not being as forthcoming with injuries as you are, I mean, that's why they do it at the professional level, in large part because of gambling and stuff. So I'll be interested to see how long that.
You're right. I mean, that's been talked about a lot, but again, I don't know if colleges will actually do that until they actually get a piece of the action. So, yeah.
Well, they get lottery dollars, man. Oregon State's trying to get.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, more information is always good, but I don't expect it.
All right. Speaking of information that I don't know if it's good, but let's get on to men's hoops. The basketball team finally broke that losing streak with a rare road win at Stanford, 85-73. Jordan Pope scored 30 points. I think he was one shy of his career high. It was the first road win of the season and just their second away from Gill Coliseum in the last three seasons. Give me a reason why I should care and not yawn through our discussion of men's basketball.
Well, I mean, they won a road game. At least we know they can win on the road. Maybe not often, but they can. The weird thing is how they won. I mean, you look at statistically, I mean, they were hot. They just were hot because they had 9 assists on 29 baskets. So that, to me, that says they had a lot of one-on-one stuff that worked. And they also did it without their posts. Stanford's mm-hmm. best player is a post. And Oregon State was with Joel Mariel and Casey Ebekwe played, I think it was a combined 22 minutes because they had 9 fouls between the two of them. So they did this all pretty much with guards on Saturday. But
small ball, baby.
Yeah, again, this just goes back to what Oregon State has been all season. They've been competitive in most of their games. It's just they have these five to six, seven minute spurts where they just nothing goes right. And they blow 33 minutes of pretty good basketball with those crappy stretches that, where they just blow winnable games. And they didn't do that Saturday against Stanford. They did that against Cal. They've done it against Stanford at home. Probably 5 or 6 games they've had that were possible wins that they just found a way to lose. And that didn't happen. Which, leads into Wednesday where they're going to play at Oregon, their last road game of the year. Oregon is, I believe that they might be down to 7 scholarship guys, and they're coming off a loss at Cal. Oregon State has to feel pretty good about the way they played against Oregon when they played, last week in Corvallis. They lost on a last second basket. I mean, if they could pair that up with another win, then I'd say, yeah, maybe we should start caring about Oregon State men's basketball. If they win back-to-back road games and then they come home for the last two games against Colorado and Utah, maybe they finish up the season on. I mean, this is kind of exactly what happened in 2021. They weren't much better that year either. And then, real late in the season, they won a road game at Cal. And all of a sudden they kind of caught fire and they, I'm not saying that's going to happen again.
Easy turbo.
I'm just saying that's how Oregon State got going last time, is they got a road win down in the Bay Area and kind of got going. But, that's not going to happen. Obviously that's not going to happen again. They first of all, they'd have to win 4 conference tournament games instead of three. So that'd be one thing. But, you know, the main thing is you look at this team and you go, okay, they can win some road games. You know, they got if they can keep all these guys together next year, I mean, they might have something next year. Maybe. I mean, you really got to live on hope with Oregon State men's basketball, because it's been a tough ask to be a fan these last few years. So,
well, and you know, they're also with the shift to the WCC, you know, that changes the level of competition, presumably, you know, and I don't know where the conference will be next year and how Oregon State slots into there, but that's worth mentioning as well. But, you know, the Beavers at this point, 12-16, 4-13 in the Pac-12, one game behind second to last place, still in the cellar, but one game behind USC for that though. But they're going to, you know, no matter what happens, they'll finish, you know, last or second to last in the conference. So I don't know.
This is all about do they finish strong enough to give you hope for next year? And do they finish strong enough to make you think that Wayne Tinkle should continue to be their coach? Now, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be. I mean, they can't afford his buyout. Has he earned next year? I mean, that's for people to decide for themselves. I'm not going to say one way or the other, but I just think if they keep this roster together and they finish out the season strong, they'll be an older team next year as opposed to being one of the younger teams out there, because college basketball has really gotten to be an old teams sport because of the COVID free year. There's a lot of junior and senior dominated teams in college basketball because the teams are able to hold on to fourth and fifth year guys. That'll start to peter out here as we get into, you know, years down the road, because the COVID year will go away. But Oregon State will be a lot of juniors on the roster next year, who have played a lot of basketball. So they might be okay next year in the WCC.
I feel like it's like July. It's July and our favorite, you know, your Major League Baseball team of choice is already so bad that we're already talking about, well, there's always next year. I feel like that's the common theme around here. Now, I feel you with there's no way, there's not, the money is not there to make a change. Even if anybody wanted to make a change, it wouldn't make sense for a lot of reasons there. So, you know, you hear it more than anybody from Oregon State fans who have thrown their hands up. They're done with the men's basketball team, you know, beyond. Yeah. They're going to have to ride it out is my message to them right now.
If they could ride it out with a team that finishes this season strong and, you know, brings most of their guys back, maybe there's a reason, you know, people will stay on the bandwagon, or, you know, there's plenty of room on it. So,
well, there's no bandwagon. The bandwagon doesn't exist yet.
Well, every team has a bandwagon. It just might not have anybody on it.
Well, it's a life raft at this point. No, yeah. It's not quite a wagon to band right together with.
But all right. Well, they are definitely a better team than they were a year ago. I don't know if that's good enough to keep people interested or not, but they are better than a year ago.
Like I said last week, I have long sensed the apathy, and maybe that's my general apathy with regard to college basketball, but I sense the apathy within the program, and I'm sure you sense that with the empty seats you see at the games at Gill Coliseum. And like I said last week, apathy is worse than anger when it comes to sports teams. When people stop caring, that's when you have a big problem. So, but like you said,
cannot be said for your Portland Pilots men's basketball team. They are not better than a year ago.
No, we won't get into details of that here on the Beaver banter, but correct there. Well, anything else we want to throw out about this baby step taking in the right direction men's basketball program?
No, not really. I mean, at this point, we're 8 days away from spring football starting, and we'll get heavy into that next week, before, you know, the day before spring practice on March 5th. So we really haven't talked much football on here, so we'll save that for next week. But yeah, there's not much else left. You know, finishing up gymnastics season and softball starting and baseball, and I want to say it's a good time to be a Beaver. I think. I don't know. I mean, there's the women's basketball team, baseball. A lot of hope there. A lot of hope there.
Yeah, should be a fun couple of months. Like he said, we'll bring you a lot of football talk next week, as we'll record on Monday, the day before spring football opens. The Beavers will start going three times a week-ish with spring, starting then with a break around spring break. So as we move forward, we'll get you some good stuff here. Football, women's basketball, a couple more weeks of men's basketball and baseball and softball as we move forward. So thanks again for listening. As always, he's Nick Daschle. I'm Joe Freeman, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.